Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Without the Joker around, you're just a silly little girl with no one around to protect her.
He's after all of us now. We need to work together.
Well, you're legitimately insane.
Here's the deal, Quinn.
You need me!
You can shove your protection right up your... I got a PhD, mother...
Harley Quinn in Birds of Prey.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Spencer Roman Sionis Williams.
Okay, well, I don't know why I had four names today, but hello, everybody.
You're from the South. Everybody has four names.
Okay? I am not from the South. What?
We got a great show in store for you as we are going to be talking about the much talked about recent film, Birds of Prey, or as it's now called, Harley Quinn's Birds of Prey. We'll talk about that in a little bit. That should be interesting.
All right, tune in each Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and check us out on our website at filmlossophers.com. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlossophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlossophy101.
Yeah, we're everywhere now. And
just, we do things, so check it out.
We do things, and yes. I just said do-do. But we do things. In fact, we want to give a big shout-out to the teams that showed up last night to our, or this Monday night, to our Netflix trivia night.
With a special shout-out to Lone Wonton.
We have a special shout-out to Lonely Wonton. Great guys, great group of folks that came out. It was an awesome time. Everybody had fun. Winners walked away with gift cards to Oblivion, as well as a $15 gift card to Regal Cinemas. So be on the lookout for the next one, because we're going to have a lot of these coming up, and every opportunity we can, we're going to have fun doing it, and you could be winning some big prizes. Who knows what's on the horizon, right?
Yeah.
So, but we are here to talk about a movie that has been getting a lot of attention, and that is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Now, I know that's not the name currently in theaters, and that's fine. We'll go over that in a second. But before we do, I want to kind of get a little bit of the particulars out of the way. Like, I don't know, our synopsis. So, Spencer, if you could, give us that official synopsis goodness.
When Gotham's most nefariously narcissistic villain, Roman Sionis, and his zealous right-hand man, Zaz, put a target on a young girl named Cass, the city is turned upside down looking for her. Harley, Huntress, Black Canary, Renee Montoya's past collide, and the unlikely foursome have no choice but to team up and take Roman down.
That's right. Directed by Kathy Yan, the film stars Margot Robbie, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Journey Smollett-Bell, Rosie Perez, Chris Messina, Ella J. Basco, Ali Wong, and Ewan McGregor. So, a couple of little pieces of interesting trivia that I thought was actually pretty cool. Before Ewan McGregor was cast as the Black Mask, which is Roman Sionis' character, or Roman Sionis' alter ego is the better word.
Yes.
Charlton Copley and Sam Rockwell were actually considered to play Black Mask. Yeah. Now, if you're not familiar with Charlton Copley, he's the guy who played Murdoch in the A-Team movie. He's also one of the main guys. He actually is the main guy in the District 12 or District 13, that alien movie.
Oh, District 9.
District 9. I'm completely off.
Yeah.
District 9. He's got a really great history, and he also did the mocap for that movie Chappie about the robot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, and then obviously Sam Rockwell. He's, you know, what's his name? Justin Hammer from the Marvel films. But
that was your first pull? He was also in Jojo Rabbit, wasn't he?
Okay, he was in Jojo Rabbit as well. He played the confused general or captain, whatever. but actually, Rockwell passed on the role, and obviously Charlton Copley did as well. But Sam Rockwell was actually considered the archetype for the casting. So when they built the entire idea around this character, they used Sam Rockwell as the basis to create the character buildup. Also, Margot Robbie actually pitched the ideas of Birds of Prey to DC and Warner Brothers as a female-led superhero action movie, and they agreed with her vision. In addition to starring in the upcoming film, Robbie is also on the board as producer with her Lucky Chap production company, making this film their largest project to date at $75 million. And we were making a little bit of a joke earlier, but it's actually very true. This movie went through a last-minute name change while the film was still in theaters, from Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn to Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
I just don't even understand. First, the first title is just too dang long. Like, I don't know why they released it like that. And it's mostly because they just wanted to fit Harley Quinn in there. I don't know why they didn't do the second title first.
I don't know why they have to. I don't even know at all. I just don't get it.
I can't even think of a movie that's been in the theaters that just changed the title of the movie.
They're like, we're going to change it from, you know, Schindler's List to something not racist that I'm not going to say. That was the first movie that came to my mind. I was like, what's a movie?
Schindler's List? You could have gone with, like, we're going to change it from Titanic to The Day the Iceberg Stood Tall. Like, something dumb like that. That's what I'm going for.
What the heck? The Day the Iceberg Stood Tall? What is this, a football movie?
Maybe.
Have Denzel Washington as the lead role of the iceberg.
The iceberg.
one dark iceberg.
Boo!
A boat full of white people. Who will stand?
We
went from not wanting to make it a racially thing.
You're the one who went there. I don't know why.
Because it sounded like it. I don't know what the thought process was. Maybe I thought it was going to make it a little bit more marketable. We just, right before we got on the air to do this, we saw Screen Rant's pitch meeting, and it was pretty hilarious. They did a pitch meeting on Harley Quinn already, and it was so great and so hilarious, but it does make a lot of sense how they're banking on a lot of the marketability already of the character Harley Quinn. Number one, because everybody cosplays her as, you know, at conventions and events, and she just seems to be the more likable character. So I don't know what the whole idea is there, but I mean, whatever, you know, that's whatever floats their boat. If it works, it works. A little bit of the numbers before we continue forward. Budget for this film is somewhere between $85 and $95 million. It's really kind of unknown, because so many different qualified, and I'm using air quotes, qualified resources can't get their numbers straight. However, the domestic box office for this weekend brought it to a $85 million threshold. So
it's close to breaking even.
It's close to breaking even, but it underperformed their projected numbers. And that's fine because, you know, hey, the movie is making money. I think that's kind of the important thing. It's making money, and they're also able to, you know, really explore an opportunity where the film doesn't have to have, like, the Holy Trinity of DC. It doesn't have to have, you know, it can branch out. They can branch out outside of the main Justice League personas. And not to mention, I mean, if there was anything that was profitable and worthwhile continuing outside of that god-awful Suicide Squad movie, it was it was Harley Quinn, as well as the sale of Hula Hoops. That's it. That's all I can say. But we got a chance to see the movie. We got a chance to watch it, and I saw it once. Spencer, how many times did you watch this movie?
I will say once. And
is that not... are you actually going to take my terminology here, and you're gonna do that? You're gonna do that, aren't you?
I'm going to, yes.
Yeah, okay. So Spence is gonna say that he saw it once. However, we both went to go see it the other night, and somebody passed out.
Listen, when I'm tired, Linda, I'm tired, and I will take a nap.
Okay. Okay. When he's tired, he's tired.
It was a long day.
That's.
I don't know why you're like coming at me like this. This is uncalled for.
Because it's just hilarious. so we're going to jump into this movie, and obviously we're not going to. This is a non-spoiler review, so we're not going to give away anything. Honestly, it's a pretty straightforward story. So if you
with all the jumping around in the beginning.
Well, the we're going to talk about it in a second, but like the literal meat of this movie is pretty straightforward.
Okay, I'll give you that.
So, but jumping into expectations. I want you to start, Spence, because I think you may have a less critical expectation than I do.
Okay. Yeah, going into this movie, I was expecting it to be on the better side of the DC spectrum.
Really?
Yeah, because
I know and I don't mean to say that to be rude. I'm just like,
yeah. No, really? I get it. it's just I don't know what it is, but DC and their women films seem to do better than their men-led films. Like, take Wonder Woman over Batman versus Superman. I will watch Wonder Woman twice versus seeing Batman versus Superman once because it was.
I would take watching paint dry over Batman versus Superman again. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, Wonder Woman was just so watchable, where the other movies in DC lineup has just not been for the most part. so you know, I was like, Harley Quinn was the good thing to take from Suicide Squad. So, you know, maybe they've got another watchable movie, which would possibly be great. Yeah, so that's what I went in with this one.
What were, like, because here's the thing, and I'm this is taking off the hat, if you will, of a Marvel fan, as well as you, taking the hat off. Where was the bar set for you coming into this movie? Like, in terms of where the height of success would needed to be like hit in order for this to be considered an okay movie.
Okay, so like the bar auto lowers once the word DC comes into the room because it just has to. What?
And that's with the Marvel fan hat off, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, like, when was the last? The last movie was Joker.
I'm not.
And come on, come on, man! Like that, I hate that movie. It didn't make any sense to me. We're not. This isn't a Joker review.
But, no, we did that one already.
But like, their movies are mostly train wrecks. Like that seems to be their de facto, and so that just lowers the bar by default for me.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a really great point. For me, in terms of expectations, I got to be honest. I really thought this movie was gonna bomb. Hmm. Like, I thought this movie was gonna be horrible. I know a lot of press who went to London for an initial. I don't know if it was a press release screening or if it was like a press event, because I had friends who were like interviewing people like Margot Robbie and some of the, like Rosie Perez and so forth and so forth. And I don't know if like that was one of those opportunities. I don't know if they allowed them to actually release a review or to wait until the film dropped on Thursday. But a lot of them came back and they were like, they all got to social media, which there wasn't a social media embargo. Which is different. You can have a review embargo, and you can have a social media embargo. But there wasn't a social media embargo for the film. So people were taken to social media and were like, oh, this movie is absolutely wonderful. This is a blast. Oh, it totally did this, and that. And for me, a lot of the times, I was thinking like, all right, well, that's probably because, you know, Warner Brothers flew you out to London and let you have all this kind of stuff. So you have to say that kind of stuff. And honestly, that was part of my thought. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I didn't want to allow other people to inspire or, you know, encourage my thoughts on the film way too much. because even though there was a lot of people who were saying good things, I know people can fluff things. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They can fluff a review, either a social media review or a real review, for the sake of continuing a really prosperous relationship between the studio and the reviewer.
Right.
That's how it works. And so, total trade secrets here, so nobody get upset. But I really did feel like the bar for me has been set so low that I am now reconsidering my thoughts on previous DC films because of where, like, it's like having a classroom full of people who are just not passing at all. And so you're like, well, I got to give them some kind of victory. So you lower the passing grade down to a 40. And you're like, all right, so we're going to, if you can do 1 + 1, you get a passing grade. It's like I have to bring the grading curve so far down, it looks like the Grand Canyon. Now, here's where my mindset is at.
Okay. Let's hear it.
And I reiterate this every time we have these kind of movies because of the fact that I need people to understand. We here at the Filmlosophers love, absolutely love, good storytelling.
Yes, love it.
That is the epitome of a great movie. That literally makes the entire foundation for what is to come. You could have great actors, you could have great CGI, you could have an incredible director, but without a great story, you got nada.
Mm-hmm.
And that's honestly what you can say for a lot of films out there. Like, take for instance, movies like Ad Astra. I heard it had great cast, Brad Pitt, a lot of people. A great CG because it's in space, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it was good.
But horrible story.
Yeah. It was kind of really meh.
It was. And then with that in mind, I really was hoping that the story coupled with the very low limbo bar, I was really hoping that this film would actually just allow me to leave the theater with like some sense of accomplishment that I was able to grasp the story, you know, that it made sense to me.
Okay.
Like, I was like, all right, so character one goes to character two, or character one goes from point A to point B, character one goes from point B to point C, character one does this, blah, 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 and then resolution. Like, that's essentially what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the only expectation. Like,
is that you'd get a story?
I'd have a story where it felt like I felt like I was that very unintelligent child in the class who figured that if he put the square peg in the round hole, they both fit. Like, yay, it works! And, like, you know, I wanted to feel that because I was really hoping this film was going to be better than I had first expected. Like, I really wanted it to hit that bar. I really didn't want the people that I knew that went to go see the film, I didn't want them to be liars. Obviously, they're not liars, but I didn't want them to, like, be just like, oh, we're doing this because they sent us out here, blah, blah, blah. No, this is actually a decent film. This is actually a decent movie. You should check it out, blah, blah, blah. So, after the film, first impressions when you left the theater, Spence. Go.
Great job on telling a story. Like, it was better than Joker for me. So I actually had fun, and I feel like that was kind of like one of the most important parts of a movie is that you should probably be having fun. Well, depending on what movie you're seeing, but this movie needed to be fun, and it was for me. It was a bizarre experience, but it was overall fun. So I was impressed.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to say, my first impression outside of the theater, once I saw the film, I was like, I don't feel as mad as I thought I would be. And I don't know if that makes me feel good about the movie that we saw or worried about my taste buds being desensitized. Because I was like, I left the theater, I'm like, that was okay. I had minimal gripes about this movie. And that's not to say that this movie's perfect. What I'm saying is that this movie actually was kind of an enjoyable, interesting ride.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of those movies where, you know, nobody likes to get in car rides with grandma, but grandma ends up going off down a hill and takes the car straight down, going through all these crazy things, and end out okay at the bottom of the hill, but it was a fun ride with grandma. You don't expect it to be fun, but it turns out to be really fun. My grandma used to own a Jeep, so that's why I was thinking.
Oh, okay. Not everyone's a grandma owns a Jeep, so...
Hey, don't hate. So, honestly, I have to admit, this movie actually had a good... fun ride to it, and I'm not upset that I saw it, and I think that actually kind of was interesting.
I feel like that's a massive improvement for DC.
Oh, massive improvement! Like if you look at everything that you've had coming out of DC, so starting back at the whole beginning of this, you know, transition for DC and Warner Brothers, you had Man of Steel, mm-hmm. which was okay. It was good.
Yeah, it was fine.
And then you had BVS, which was...
That was the next thing?
Yeah.
I feel like they... Okay. All right.
Because there was no Batman movie.
Right. I remember they skipped over... Right. They did. Yeah. Oh, dang.
Remember? Because they... So after... They did that whole thing or whatever at Comic-Con where they talked about how, oh, we're going... You know, our next movie, we're going to have so-and-so and come and read a little excerpt. And that guy came out and read a little excerpt from Dark Knight Returns, the graphic novel by Frank Miller. Great graphic novel, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then you see the logo of Batman and Superman superimposed over each other. And everybody went nuts. And that was supposed to be the next big movie. Now, it didn't make any sense. But, I mean, it felt like they were just taking a vast leap with the storyline. And... mind you, it was god-awful what we got served to us. Yeah, just horrendous.
Yeah. Really, the only part I liked about it was when Wonder Woman came in. Because she kicked butt when she got into the fight.
Well, when she came in and then you had that really awesome, like, guitar... I don't even know if it was a guitar solo or...
Like, they already had her theme ready and everything.
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh,
what
yeah.
is this? Why did we get pushed into this movie? I love it now.
Right? Can we just transition this movie over to her? And so, like, the god-awful pieces of that, and then the horrendous transition over to Justice League.
Oh, gosh, Justice League.
And then we had the very, the much better Wonder Woman film,
mm-hmm.
and then, oh, I'm sorry, no, we had the Wonder Woman film
before, right
before
Justice
League.
League.
Yeah.
Like, the thing about Justice League was, like, I noticed the second that there was not a woman director in the film.
Yeah.
Because that was, it was bizarre. I was like, why are we looking at her butt all of a sudden?
That is Joss Whedon to the fullest there. you had a little bit of reprieve with Wonder Woman, and then we got Justice League, which kind of just threw everything back into the Stone Ages. And then we had Aquaman that was okay.
Yeah.
And now we've been on this waiting game of The Suicide Squad, which was the one that James Gunn directed.
Right, okay.
Which is coming out later, I believe, this year or next year or whatever. I'm not too sure.
I think it's next year because Wonder Woman 84 is this year.
That's right. That's
I
right.
am actually excited for that movie.
Well, it's because it's Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And I think...
that's the reason, yes.
And then this Harley Quinn movie. Now, here's the thing. I'm not... I read a lot of comic books. I'm very knowledgeable in a lot of the comics. However, I'm not a huge Harley Quinn fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really, except for what's going on in the current Black Label Batman storyline that's happening with, what is that run called? Curse of the White Knight. Curse of the White Knight and then the Mr. Freeze graphic novel that came before it, which Harley Quinn is like this mastermind in this entire thing. It's really cool. That's the only time I've ever actually taken interest into her character. I find it kind of a lot. But I have to admit, Margot Robbie does a decent job as Harley Quinn. Like, as an actual, like, live-action version. Like, she's cosplaying Harley Quinn in the movie. Let's just put it that way. Like, she does a great job of cosplaying Harley Quinn in the movie. And it's a great you know, great work, I have to admit.
Yeah, I don't know. She kind of fits what I would expect, because I grew up on, like, you know, the animated series.
Yeah.
And that's, like, her first appearance. So, like, you know, like, she kind of does fit into what I would assume a live-action Harley Quinn would be like. So she does a pretty decent job in my book.
And it's like, one of the things that I have to admit, I was moaning and groaning quite a bit when it came to Margot Robbie playing Harley Quinn, because one of the things that kind of was noticeable to me was her lack of consistency with the dialect of what you call it, of Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn has a very, like, almost old school New Yorker style kind of dialect, like her act. I don't know if it's an accent or a dialect. It's just the way she speaks.
Right.
And Margot Robbie does it well enough at times, but in the trailers, it seemed like at times she was kind of like slipping out of it.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's like very hardly noticed. Like, I know it probably happened, and I probably may have missed it once or twice, but I feel like she does a great job of just embodying this haphazard, you know, walking, you know, bulldozer in high heels, and it actually works for me. Like, we're looking at there's a picture on the screen, and it's the picture from when she's ordering this, like, after a night of, like, drinking and chaos, she goes to this place and orders this egg, bacon
sandwich with cheese,
egg bacon sandwich with cheese with just two dashes of hot sauce on, like, this beautiful bread. Like, it got me hungry looking at it.
I was hungry going into this, and I was upset with the scene of it.
But the whole action of her, like, drooling and salivating over this whole thing, it was like, yeah, I can relate, and that was fun, you know. And it's opportunities like that where it seemed very much a way for me to connect to this character. And I think that was a great thing they did. Bottom line, you know?
Yeah, it's moments like that where you just got to see her be her, and it was perfect.
Other opportunities in this film, other great performances. Rosie Perez is always great. She plays Montoya, a cop who's just unappreciated and just decides she needs, you know, a way out. She needs to do something about what's going on in her city. And it's actually very true how much it's like, oh, well, you know, blah, 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 don't worry about this. Or she's just completely undermined all the time. Like, her entire police squad treats her like poop.
Yeah.
And it's sad. But it's definitely a really awesome opportunity to showcase this character and kind of her transition into becoming one of the Birds of Prey. You also have Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who plays Huntress, has a great backstory. It's sad that they don't delve into deeper of that, you know, lore.
It's sad that she's in this movie for so little as she is. Because honestly, she's one of my favorite characters from this movie.
Yeah.
For what little she's in it.
She's absolutely awesome. And it's, you're right, it is sad that she's just completely, like, sidestepped for no reason other than, like we saw in the pitch meeting, she's just not a marketable character for people in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's just a random person that has yet to gain any kind of knowledge in. And I'm pretty sure, I am more than certain, everybody who are comic book fans and everybody who knows the stories, they're like, no, Huntress has this really great backstory of, you know, when she was this, she became this, this, and that. And I'm like, that's great and all, but it doesn't translate into this movie. Just, like, bottom line. And that's kind of okay. One of the other characters that's really great in the film, you have actually one of my favorites, and for a whole another reason other than, what, you know, her role in the film, but Journey Smollett-Bell. I've actually been a big fan of hers since she was on a WGN series called Underground. Okay. It was a really great series. I absolutely adored it. But she plays Black Canary in this movie. And it's interesting that we go to the character of Black Canary in this one. However, it's just a weird transition going from the Laura Lance Black Canary from the Arrow series, and now we're on this one, Dinah Lance, from the movie. Have you not seen the Arrow movie?
I have not, but I'd also like to remind you that this is coming from DC, who currently has two Jokers running around, so who knows?
I mean, technically there would have been three, but still. I know. But Journey Smollett-Bell is always somebody that, like, completely dives into a role. She does a great job at embodying her character, and I have to admit, as much as I really wish there was more of an equal focus on other characters other than Harley Quinn in this
movie. See, the problem is the movie is called Birds of Prey, and the Birds of Prey are barely in this movie.
The Birds of Prey are not the primary focus, which is why
I'm pretty sure
they had to go ahead and do the whole transition thing of not having the Birds of Prey be the focus of the film anymore.
This movie should have been called Harley Quinn, and then in tiny text, she'd been like, and the Birds of Prey.
Yeah. It's true. It's so frustrating. And then obviously you have on the other side, you have Ewan McGregor playing a kooky person. Apparently
That's putting it lightly.
Which is really weird, because I've never known Roman Sionis to be kind of this spastic, emotional type of villain. Black Mask, I don't ever recall him. He's always been like a stone cold type of business person.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been like over emotional or things like that, and he kind of gets portrayed in that way. So I don't know if that was just the creative direction they went, or just in how like they're like, oh, well, we're pulling it from this series or that series, which, again, I don't ever recall Black Mask being in a comic book series that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I've seen him in certain like DC cartoons. Like, if you ever heard of the Under the Red Hood, or the Red Hood DC animated film, Black Mask is actually one of the guys in that film.
Okay.
But, I mean, hey, Ewan McGregor made for a very nuanced and interesting bad guy.
When he's on screen, you're watching him.
You're watching him. Chris Messina, I'm not too familiar with a lot of his previous works, but he does play a very interesting Victor Zsasz.
Yeah.
Now, if you're familiar with Victor Zsasz, Victor Zsasz is the man who believes that he is helping people be saved by killing them. And then what he does is he marks his body with a cut for that person. And he's very psychotic. And I have to say, Chris Messina is an absolute, like, gold star Victor Zsasz. Like, Victor Zsasz is nuts. Chris Messina is nuts. I honestly did not know at any point in time what was safe and what wasn't for this character in the film, because he just seemed like anytime he was on screen, he was nutso. And it was for somebody like me who is absolutely in love with the Arkham video games.
Mm-hmm.
He has prominent roles in two of those games, and this is what I would see as a Victor Zsasz character. So, other people who have lesser roles, Ali Wong, she plays a DA. Really, there's not many other people who actually show up in this film.
Right.
But the sad part about it all is the fact that this film did not hit its projected box office weekend numbers, despite the fact that this film actually had a lot of great reviews going in. Like, everywhere, like I mentioned, everywhere, in terms of review, were like, oh, this movie's great, this movie's that, blah, 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 you should go see it. And mind you, I can imagine why they didn't want to go see it or why it didn't do as well, but this is actually something that happens quite often in movies anyway, where a film gets the expectations of a film are subverted. And you all of a sudden become a fan of a film after the fact, once more people have gone to see it. We've seen this time and time again, where you hear about a film and you're on the fence, and you hear like, oh, it's doing poorly or whatever, whatever. And then you hear from someone and they're like, oh, you got to go see it. It's such a good movie. Oh, don't listen to what the critics say. It's actually a really good movie. And then you go see it and you're like, oh my gosh, it was actually worth watching. And that's happened in our past. Like, Spencer, we've actually gone to go see a few films like that. And I mean, that's got to be like the epitome of Blindspotting's whole advertising.
Yeah.
Like
word of mouth.
Yeah. Everything was like, nobody was talking about it. There was no push for it. There was no commercials that were being publicized on TV for it. And then, to make matters worse, theaters were only running it for like a few weeks.
Yeah. Which was so sad, like, because, like, what was it? Wasn't it like when I tried to get you guys to go see it?
Mm-hmm.
That's when it became hard to find because it was just leaving theaters?
Yeah. We actually had to go see it at like 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night. We had to see it super late because that was the only time throughout the entire day that it was showing in that theater.
Yeah, this movie came out in 2018, and we're still talking about it. So that should tell you a little bit of how good it is.
And other films that are similar, like, for me, I absolutely love this documentary/mockumentary. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It is so hilarious. It's called Exit Through the Gift Shop. Now, I don't know if you know who Banksy is.
Yeah.
So,
the British artist that nobody knows.
So, Exit Through the Gift Shop was this documentary he made back in 2010. And it is like this complete rewiring of how people see how art is perceived, and how many people can flock to just like somebody like, oh, I'm a new artist in town, I'm doing this, and people will flock to that, and people with money and people who are affluent will like run to it. And honestly, nobody really saw it as a legitimate movie. It didn't make it through like main avenues of showing it to people. I think it made it like into one theater or a few theaters nearby, but it really didn't go further than that. And honestly, it is a hilarious and wonderful mockumentary that you should really see, because it's about essentially about a man named, well, I don't remember the guy's name offhand, but he's this Italian filmmaker who just fell in love with making films, and he falls in love with all these Banksy works, finds Banksy, joins him, and then all of a sudden starts making his own art based off of all the things that Banksy does, and it becomes a ripoff to Banksy. It's funny, but completely under the radar. Nobody talked about it. It literally didn't find its stride until it started making its rounds through like Showtime and, you know, through online, and people downloading it and ripping it off of like, what was going on at the time? What, LimeWire? taking it off of LimeWire and FrostWire. And but it's such a great movie, and people didn't think anything of it. Another great one that I know you've talked about at length is Get Out.
Love it.
Like, honestly, nobody thought Get Out was going to be anything more than maybe like a ridiculous parody, another, not another scary movie
mm-hmm.
kind of riff. And in all honesty, there was nothing to base, you know, the ability of Jordan Peele and his ability to write horror other than what we've seen in Key and Peele.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say Jordan and Peele, but no, that's not Key and Peele.
That's the same person.
I'm getting there. Leave me alone. But like everything that we could base it off of in terms of comparison was Key and Peele. And Key and Peele, although it had some really trippy times, didn't come off as a horror.
It didn't, but there were a few darker sketches.
No, yeah, there were a few darker sketches, but with more of the intent to be funny. And it was like, all right, well, if I'm looking at that, then if I put horror and comedy together and we got somebody as prominent as Jordan Peele, then it sounds like, who happened to be on a variety nightly TV show, much like a family of Wayans who had done that as well and came off with not another teen movie, the numbers just didn't really add up in terms of this being something worth watching. But then people started actually going to the theaters and checking it out and completely blew everybody away. Mm-hmm. So I say all that to say this film completely subverts your expectation in terms of you hoping you're not going to fall asleep or hoping, you know, you got about a good hour and somewhat. How long is this movie? Hour and 49 minutes. You got about a good hour and 49 minutes to take a nap. No, no, no. This movie is actually worth watching. It's actually worth taking the time to see it and give it that day, that time of day. Now, like I mentioned earlier, this does not mean that this is a perfect film. One of the things that really do mess with your ability to stay focused is the film's constant jumping of time frames, like timelines. The film will spend time at one point in the film focusing on where Harley's going to the police department to look for something, and all of a sudden in the midst of everything she stops, pauses, and is like, oh, I should explain this, and then it goes back in time to the whole, like, what happened 15 minutes, almost 15 minutes of a time before.
It's really like listening to a child explain a story, but then realize that, oh, I forgot to tell you about this. Like, that's how, like, the first part of the movie comes across.
I am so upset that you said that because I'm surprised I didn't say it first. I'm like, that makes perfect sense. This is one of those movies where it's like, and then I went on the swings, and then I dropped my lollipop. Oh, and then the teacher gave me a lollipop before I went outside for recess.
That's exactly how it
is. It's like completely like that. It's true. That is actually the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. This movie has ADHD. This movie doesn't know how to stay consistent until the last third, and then there's no flashback in the last third.
Yeah, like once you hit that part, it just stays there.
Yeah. But the first two acts of the film do spend a lot of time going back and forth, so you do really have to kind of pay attention in terms of at what timeline or at what frame of time it's focusing on at that moment. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it kind of does a little bit of like what Guy Ritchie's known for in terms of like, oh, let me explain this, and then goes backtrack and gives the backstory to that to fill in there. But Guy Ritchie does it a lot better. This is just kind of all over the place. And here's the thing. It doesn't hurt so much that it takes you out of the film, but it does offer a bit more of a distraction when it does happen. Like you're getting caught up in the moment, and then it happens and it backtracks, like, oh, okay. And you're like, ah, and then you're focusing on it, but you're still distracted on the fact that you now have to backtrack to this point to get back to that point.
Plus, I think some of the time increments, since they just plaster it on screen, like the first time it backtracks, it's like 4 minutes ago. And I'm like, what could have possibly happened in 4 minutes it's necessary to tell me this?
100%. I was like, what happened 4 minutes ago? I literally was thinking, like, what happened 4 minutes prior to this moment? But I was tired too. I still saw the movie, even though I was tired. But
I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
But I was like thinking, I was like, well, 4 minutes ago we were like walking up to get to the movie, and I was thinking like, what does that have to do with it? So I got confused by that too. But the film does suffer with a little bit of inconsistency there in terms of its ability to tell a story. Also, the film does obviously suffer from a lack of focus on what is supposed to be the primary players. It takes way too long to get to the point to where you have your full Birds of Prey team.
Which is really sad because I like them together.
It
would be fun if like they spent more time together because they actually play off each other rather well.
They do. You have very contrasting characteristics of the three of them, or of all of them, but of the main three. And they really do have a very unique way to complement each other, and it's very fun to watch. There are a lot of other inconsistencies with the film, such as like story development, situational opportunities and missteps. There's no end credit scene, so you don't have to stick around for that.
No, but if you do stick around, you will hear half of a story that Harley is telling about Batman.
What does she say?
Nothing important. Like, she starts telling the story, and then the movie cuts her off.
Who cuts her off?
The movie. Like, it's nothing visual. It's all audio.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. So which is also rather fitting. It was confusing.
Huh. Well, there you go. other than that, I mean, this is a movie where you're not going to get some kind of intellectual stimulation. You're not going to get some kind of massive revelation on some deep sense of the future for the DC extended universe, or because they're not called the cinematic universe, they're
the DCEU
sounds like a European thing. you're not going because you're wanting to see like some massive cameo or anything. You're going to go see it because it's simply a fun and pretty unique movie. The visuals in this film are pretty cool. It's very vibrant in colors. I have to admit, Harley's attack at the police department is actually quite fun to watch.
Despite making no sense when you really
despite making
that.
No sense. It seems like it's a it really felt like it belonged in a scene from the Dread movie. Like, I felt like Carl Urban was going to walk in and be like, I am the law. Like, just with all the slow motion and everything, it just really felt like that.
But it did look great. I did.
Oh, it looked great. It looked absolutely fun. mind you, like I said, some inconsistencies and missteps here and there. But I think despite all that, I think the film is still worth recognizing as a win. Mm-hmm. For DC, like, yeah, plain and simple. 100%. I think DC can really look at this and say, yeah, we can pat ourselves on the back for that one, you know, and really move forward with whatever opportunities from there. Now, that does leave open that door for where this goes from here, which I don't know if any of those characters are going to be pushed as marketable individuals, especially with the change of the title of the film recently, moving to Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Because now Harley Quinn is the focus, whereas before it was Harley Quinn or Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
I don't even know what the heck that was supposed to mean.
The Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley
Quinn.
Why
was it fantabulous?
Because it's a word that probably Harley Quinn would say.
I don't think she even said that in the movie.
I don't know. She probably did, and you were asleep.
You're a horrible secret
keeper. I know, but it's great because you fell asleep in the movie. Can't make me laugh. I'm sick.
I went to watch it again today. So
I know you
I could
did.
See the whole thing. I'm telling the audience.
Oh, you're telling the audience that you're copping to the fact that you fell asleep the first time.
I wanted to see the movie. Like, so that should speak to how good it is. Like, I fell asleep and I was like, oh, I wanted to see this. So I paid for it again on the cheap day.
I fell asleep the first time, but even though we're going to talk about it today, I'm choosing to see it again.
Yeah, if it was
this
bad,
time with
I
my eyelids
like,
open.
I saw enough.
Bottom line, I have to say, this movie is definitely worth watching even once. This is a movie where you can definitely sit down, grab a pizza or grab some popcorn, grab something to drink, and just enjoy the film. I actually would rather enjoy this movie than whatever god-awful serving the Fast and the Furious franchise has for us in the near future.
He's been very anti-Fast 9, people.
Oh my gosh, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do a whole episode based on like everything Fast and the Furious. Just so you can see what I'm talking about.
I've seen Hobbs and Shaw.
Well, you
liked
see,
it.
That was a spinoff.
It was still great.
With the only two likable people in the entire franchise. Okay, two of the three. The third one died. So it's like...
Or did they? I know tons of people are back for 9.
No, I mean he's dead in real life. He's dead.
Oh, Paul Walker.
I'm like, I don't think there's any question about it. If he did, he's got a lot of explaining to his daughter.
Oh, jeez.
But I really think that this movie has a lot more likability for me in terms of story development and in terms of the fun, because it's already in a fantastical world. It's already in a comic book, like, made for comic book world where things don't necessarily always make sense.
Like, getting on that, like, fantastical element, mm-hmm. I was thinking about this, watching this movie. I was like, oh, yeah, Wonder Woman is part of this universe, too. And they're just, like, Harley Quinn and Wonder Woman are grounded in such different ways that it'd almost be bizarre to see them on screen together.
Well, it's even weirder than that, because I'm, like, looking and and maybe it was because of the fact that the In the Heights trailer was the last trailer that played.
Were you still singing In the Heights?
Oh, heck yeah. Throughout the entire movie. In the Heights. but no, I probably either because of that, because of that trailer, but I mean, it looked like Gotham had like a little Puerto Rico in there or something. Like, it looked like the scene that we had just seen from the In the Heights trailer. I was like, because
no, you're right. It did seem like that.
It didn't seem like Gotham at all. And I'm like,
well, you know, Gotham has like 158 different districts that all have their distinct flavor of Gotham City.
How do you know that?
Yeah, that's exactly what it has to be, because each time we see Gotham, it morphs
making that up. Okay.
From one city to another. It doesn't make any sense.
I almost thought you were for real. I'm like, that's a really good statistic. Where's that from? But never mind. And mind you, yes, Gotham is a really big city. It's supposed to emulate whatever New York is in the real world. I don't even know. But like, I don't, because it's like, then you have Metropolis, and then what the heck is Metropolis? And I don't know.
Yeah, and now they're next to each other.
Now they're next to each other. So
weird.
It all doesn't make any sense. But this didn't really feel like it was in Gotham. Yet at the same time, I didn't really care for that specific piece of information. If that makes any sense, I just didn't really care that it was, whether if it was in Gotham or wasn't, because nobody from Gotham that I was familiar with was in the film other than Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember where Suicide Squad takes place. So, yeah, see?
Doesn't it take place?
I don't know.
In Gotham?
I don't know. They end up in Louisiana for at one point in time. Aren't they all in Louisiana?
I don't know.
I don't know. They're somewhere.
It's been forever since I've seen that movie that one time.
I just know Will Smith looked like something from like New Jack City in the beginning of that movie. I don't know, but whatever it is, this film is actually worth watching. It's actually worth giving it an opportunity, and we're glad that we got a chance to check it out. So, wrapping this whole thing up, talking about subverting expectations, Spencer, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
This movie passes for me. You know, well done, DC. You've made another watchable movie. That's bringing you up to, like, what, three is it now? Out of your entire universe?
That just seems so condescending. Like, so, well done, DC. You should have been getting it right a long time now.
I should have, but whatever. We're apparently moving into the right direction. I like this movie. It was insane, and lots of it made no sense, but I was willing to go for it because, you know, it was just fun, and I had fun. So I'm going to give this a 3 because, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's.
I had fun. So good
you
job.
You hear that? Give Spence a good time, and he'll give you a 3.
Don't.
In terms of my thoughts, the film was good. It was decent enough that it gets a passing grade for me, so it does pass. The film does have a consistent storyline. We're not going to give away the ending of the film. That is something you're going to have to go and check out for yourself. But the film does have a great it has a decent storyline through and through. A little bit of the inconsistencies are peppered throughout, but if you look past them, overall the film delivers an enjoyable ride. In terms of monocles, now that's a horse of a different color, because I don't know if I can be as generous as Spencer.
Just assumed you wouldn't have been.
No, not at all. And that's not saying much, because I have to contemplate the fact that this film has a lot of great actors, but I don't think all of them are going to. So I'm going to be honest. I don't think Rosie Perez is going to come back as Montoya.
Mm-hmm.
Just because this seems like one of those kind of opportunities where it's just one and done and she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, hey, if she comes back, great. The bigger one here is we need to bring back Journey Smollett Bell and Elizabeth what's her name? Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yes, as Huntress.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are like my two, like they need to come back in something because they were fantastic.
No doubt. And the fact that they're marketable characters are people who we can now start exploring now that the Arrowverse is done and at least the Arrow series is no more. We can start traversing into reestablishing those kind of characters in the cinematic universe, if you will. So, for DC. So, I'm going to give this film a 2.25.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to give it a 2.25 because I'm giving it one monocle for Black Canary. I'm going to give it one monocle for Huntress. And I'm going to give it a quarter monocle for Margot Robbie.
Okay.
And that's saying enough because I don't really like the character of Harley Quinn, but she does a great job at making it enjoyable, and I applaud her for even doing that. So, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can follow us on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check out all of our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We do want to reiterate, we had a blast last night, this past Monday, at our Netflix trivia night at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. We want to give a huge thank you to Oblivion for allowing us to come in and having an awesome time. We had myself, my co-host here, Spencer, was there. We had Emma from Video Game Bang, as well as Curtis from Video Game Bang. And so it was a great night. We had fun. And people walked away with some really awesome prizes. Like, plain and simple. It came down to a tie, folks. It was a tie. We had to come up with tiebreaker questions, and it was just off the hook. So, check us out on those Facebook, on those social pages, where we let everybody know whenever events like this come up. We have another one coming up next month, and it's going to be a big one. But we're not going to divulge what it is now, because if you want to know what it is, head over to the social pages, head over to our Facebook page. You'll learn about it soon enough. All right. But again, this was a great conversation. And mind you, remember, not every film that gets a great review deserves it. Just like not every film that gets a bad review deserves that either. So think on your own, have your own opinions, develop your own thoughts. And we'd love to hear them. So,
do not be sheep, people.
Do not be sheep. So, bah. From all of us here at the Film Losers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.